The presidential motorcade has just passed through heavy crowds in downtown Dallas and was circling through the fringes of the business district when three shots suddenly rang out.
Destroying the media lies and dismantling the narratives. One story at a time. It's the Adrian Slade Show.
So Trump has finally met with Kim Jong-un for their summit in Singapore. I'm Adrian Slade. Thanks for tuning in. I don't care what you say. You might love Trump to death. You might hate Trump. Whatever the case may be, this is a very surreal moment. I don't think anybody could have predicted this, all right? I mean, especially some of the funniest parts of the meeting came when Trump decided to tell the cameraman for the journalist, hey, make sure to take the photographs so we don't look fat. Check this out.
Very nice. Getting a good picture of everybody so we look nice and handsome and thin.
Beautiful.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
I mean, at least he's humorous about it. But my question is, what kind of trick photography are you going to be using on Kim Jong-un? I mean, the guy looks like a 15-year-old pug with an overactive thyroid. I mean, I don't know what kind of camera lens you're going to put on this guy to thin him up, make him look, make him look just slick and lean. But hey, who knows? But I mean, you know, a lot of people were critical about this whole meeting. You know, they're always going, well, you know, Trump shouldn't be legitimizing this this regime. At this point, I don't care about legitimacy because social media and global politics is now a little bit easier to see on a daily basis through social media and through the connections online. At this point, some things need to be fixed, okay? I mean, Obama tried it with Iran, and that was a giant fail. And thank goodness we got rid of that Iran deal, because we basically gave them pallets of cash. We allowed them to build nukes that we found in facilities, and they basically lied about the whole thing. But I don't know what we're getting out of this this denuclearization from North Korea. I'm still suspect to the whole Korea deal, because of the fact that, you know, North Korea, Kim Jong-un actually met with Jinping, whatever his name is, in China twice in secret meetings. So I don't know what's going on there. I mean, the most we can hope for, which is not great, but it's better than where we are, is that they move in a direction of economics that, China, I've drummed this a bunch on this show, but China has this state-run capitalism. It's a faux capitalism. It looks like it might be capitalistic in nature on the outside, but really the government owns the interest of most of the companies. And, you know, they give their citizens just enough to feel fine about everything, but at least they're not killing them and putting them in death camps. You know what I'm saying? That doesn't justify China, because we would love for China to see real capitalism and destroy the communism stronghold on that country. And if you've gone back to my other show, I did a whole show on communist China and how it's bigger than what it seems. And in fact, I think on the next show, I might even, or maybe even later in this show, if I feel like it, we might cover how China is influencing New Zealand of all places right now. But, you know, the one thing that we can always expect is the liberal media to just jump all over this. I mean, you know, it's just like Russia collusion. You know, they were like, oh, the 80s called. They want your foreign policy back there, Mitt Romney. Russia's not a threat. We fixed all that. And then next thing you know, Russia's meddling in our elections. And, you know, Donald Trump is siding with Vladimir Putin, the communist. Same thing happened with North Korea. It was just 6 months ago or so that they were just going on and on about Kim Jong-un's daughter, making her out to be Kim Kardashian from North Korea, you know, at the Olympics. And then as soon as Trump starts facilitating a meeting, all of a sudden they're the evil empire and, you know, we shouldn't be doing this and legitimizing this and what have you. But apparently Obama was in a position to do something like this and he didn't take it. Now realize the nuclear program was all because of Bill Clinton in North Korea. He was giving them nuclear energy. Yeah. And then they turned it into nuclear weapons. or they tried to. And that's the same thing that we started doing with Obama with Iran. But for some reason, Obama didn't take up on this invitation from, of all people, Dennis Rodman.
When you speak about getting to know Kim Jong-un, you're the only person who knows him as well as President Trump. And what do you think? Why do you think this meeting is important? Why was it important for you to be in Singapore?
Well, I just felt like that it almost didn't happen, you know, but I'm glad it did. I guess it gave me a little more sign of a light as far as like knowing the fact that I did something pretty historical as far as like bringing awareness to North Korea and some of the issues that's over there. And I've been trying to tell people around the world that I like the guy because he's a genuine guy. He's 35 years old. He's a young kid to me. And he actually cares about what goes on in the world. I don't look at him as a dictator. I look at him as more like a person that really wants to try to blend in with the world. And I try to invade that to people, but people looked at me like I was out of my mind. And I'm not trying to take the credit. I've always said that to everyone in the world. I said, if Trump wants the credit, he can take all the credit. He can have it all. I just want them to talk. And I said that with Obama, and Obama just pretty much blew me off. And they thought that I was a laughing stock. I didn't know what I was doing. And I kept trying to tell people that he really wants to talk. He really wants to try to connect with the world, especially America.
I mean, like I said, you could not have predicted this at all. You could not have said, oh yeah, basketball star is going to be diplomatically setting the stage for one of the most tyrannical regimes that has never finished declaring war against us. And a reality TV star and, you know, billionaire mogul will be president and they will meet together. No one could have predicted that in our lifetime. But here we are. And Rodman's over there because he's peddling his cannabis cryptocurrency. The, was it pot coin or something like that? I don't know what that is. Apparently it has to do with marijuana and blockchain technology. So he's out there sporting a MAGA hat, basically saying that, you know, I threw this by to Obama to no avail. But, you know, the media, where was their outrage on Obama when he was normalizing relations with Cuba? You know, that's never brought up. We never talk about those kind of things. You know, we don't have people like Ben Rhodes out there saying, just trying to imagine what the media and political reaction would have been if Obama had lavishly embraced Kim Jong-un for those results. Well, you know, we did see a few things when Obama was in Cuba. You know, Raul Castro was taking Obama out to the ball game for some, you know, hot dogs and some fun. And this was while ISIS was beheading some of our reporters. You know, no biggie. They were taking selfie portraits in front of graffiti murals of Che Guevara. I mean, Obama was ballroom dancing in photo ops. And the media was crazy over the U.S. Embassy. They thought the U.S. Embassy was historic in Cuba, even though they vilified and played down the one that was moved in Jerusalem recently. But, you know, we didn't even get anything from the Castro regime out of the deal. I mean, but this is the media for you. They're constantly scrutinizing and criticizing in full anger and just unabashed, unashamed hatred for the president. You know, that they are the Robert De Niro, the F Trump of media. You know, that's their role. They're the fourth estate that's going to sit there and say, oh, well, you know, we are going to be objective journalists, but then we're going to write stories like this one from the Washington Times and the New York Times. They're spending much of their journalistic resources to expose the fact that a Chinese proverb that Ivanka Trump quotes in a tweet may not be a Chinese proverb. This is from the New York Times. Ivanka Trump, the elder daughter of President Trump, celebrated her father's landmark meeting with the leader of North Korea after decades of hostilities between the two countries by quoting what she called a Chinese proverb. Quote, those who say it cannot be done should not interrupt those doing it, Ms. Trump posted on Monday on Twitter, hours before Mr. Trump's face-to-face meeting with Kim Jong-un in Singapore. But Ms. Trump's 91-character missive quickly became the object of ridicule by critics in the United States of Mr. Trump and his presidency. The saying, as it turned out, was not Chinese. One website suggested it originated in the United States itself at the turn of the 20th century. So maybe she was eating at Panda Express, you know, cracked open a fortune cookie and read it and said, wow, you know, I've got my lucky numbers on the back. I'm going to tweet out this little fortune because it's ironic to the timing and it's inspirational according to everything that's going on right now. But, you know, she forgot one pertinent part. She forgot the tag ending game. You know, whenever you open up a fortune cookie, you have to finish the fortune cookie quote with the saying, quote, in bed. Those who say it cannot be done should not interrupt those doing it in bed. There we go. I fixed it for you there, Ivanka. How about that? Now, I mean, do we all remember when Donald Trump showed off a video of his granddaughter, Arabella, when she was 6 years old, singing the Mandarin and singing in Mandarin and reciting ancient Chinese poetry during the President Xi Jinping's visit? I mean, you know, should we take this and the fortune cookie and the picture she tweeted out of her, you know, embracing her child and say, oh, here's another example of a feckless see you next Tuesday, Samantha Bee? I mean, this is what we're dealing with these freaks in the media. Virtue signaling all the time, and they're constantly getting into forgetfulness of their side, of the things that they did. It's almost as though they think that the presidency and history started with the inauguration of 2017. I mean, they're forgetting all of the stuff that the Obama administration did, whereas, they're basically condemning Trump for the same things or some things that are slightly similar but may not be. You know, Vice Magazine had this this article they put out said, because Trump refuses to stop ripping up documents, which is literally illegal, the White House employs a team of people to simply tape up the documents he destroys. Wow, so Obama must be out there tearing up Trump must be out there tearing up documents. Politico published a story that is the most obvious and perfect metaphor for the Trump administration's time in office. According to former officials, the president has a tendency to rip up documents he is legally required to preserve, and government employees are forced to tape them back together. Quote, I had a letter from Schumer. He tore it up, Solomon Lartley said, a former career government official who was fired abruptly in March for reasons that remain murky. It was the craziest thing ever. He ripped papers into tiny pieces. Lartley and his team would spend their days using scotch tape to reconstruct the destroyed documents. The Presidential Records Act requires the White House to save any papers that the president touches and send them to the National Archives. Well, about those National Archives, and about Trump shredding some letters from Chuck Schumer into tiny pieces. Real Clear Politics has a great story that I read on Sunday. Crisis at the National Archives. In the middle of directing the difficult task of transferring the historically important records of the Obama administration into the National Archives, the archivist in charge, David Fiorio, ran into a serious problem. A lot of the key records are missing. What? Obama was shredding National Archive records? He wasn't even tearing them to pieces. He was hitting delete. A first-rate librarian, Fiorio has been driving a much-needed digital overhaul and expansion of the National Archives over the 9 years of his appointment. This will greatly improve the ability to digitally sketch and search locally and remotely, as well as accessing files themselves. But back in, to support the effort in 2014, Obama signed the Presidential and Federal Records Act. For the first time, electronic government records were placed under the 1950s Federal Records Act. The new law also includes updates clarifying the responsibilities of federal government officials when using non-governmental email systems, and empowering the National Archives to safeguard original and classified records from unauthorized removal. And yet, the accumulation of recent congressional testimony has made it clear that the Obama administration itself engaged in the wholesale destruction and loss of tens of thousands of government records covered under the act, as well as the intentional evasion of the government records recording system by engaging in private email exchanges. So they have these private servers, all of them do, and they're able to circumvent, you know, the governmental Freedom of Information Act and government acts of preserving documents for the National Archives. And it's not something that's new with, you know, with Obama, but he did engage in this. You know, one of the reasons why you want all of these documents is for a couple of reasons. One of them was the writer said, in my own research, I found a detailed report of a debriefing of Nazi deputy Reisfurter Rudolph, I can't even say his name, Hess, by MI6 the day after he parachuted into Scotland, a report that was not in the British archives. It established that in May of 1941, over 7 months before the Wannsee Conference formalized the Nazis' final solution, Hess told the British, we are exterminating the Jews. It is established as lies. The Allies claim they only learned about the Holocaust later. And Paul Kinger's book, which I highly recommend, Dupes, the National Archives led to him writing that book because he was researching something on Frank Marshall Davis and uncovered a wide net of communist influence within the Democrat Party and some Republican wings going all the way back to the Bolshevik Revolution. So that is why you want to preserve the National Archives. But, you know, Obama's out there just deleting stuff. They're using stuff on private servers so they can circumvent that. But we're going to worry about Donald Trump ripping up, you know, Chuck Schumer's letter into pieces of paper. I mean, it's ridiculous what they have done. And they accuse us of whataboutism, but clearly there's a double standard. You know, I mean, it's one thing to go behind and scotch tape a document together. It's another thing to delete National Archive records altogether. Back in a second.
This is Adrian Slade.
The Adrian Slade Broadcast.
So everyone is praising this meeting between Trump and Kim Jong-un. And I don't exactly know what all of this is about. I mean, I can't figure out what's going on here, where we're going with this. I mean, people bark about how we stated we would be ending our war gaming in South Korea. But let's remember the war games were a public middle finger to the North Korea regime in China the whole time. So something tells me we'll probably make those operations covert and continue them regardless of whatever deal we have and do it under the radar, because that's how we operate. You know, and North Korea saying they're going to discontinue their nuclear program. Well, let's also remember that Kim Jong-un met with Xi from China twice in surprise visits before this meeting. So we also want to remember that Iran was aiding North Korea in its nuke program. Would they be testing and maintaining their nuke program in Iran or China? Quite possibly in conflict to our, you know, in our agreement. I mean, we know that North Korea has basically exhausted where it can test its nuclear weapons. They got a whole mountain caving in because they've tested it so many times there. So would they just test it elsewhere and then bring those weapons in when they need it? You know, of course, the prospect of a Chinese-styled controlled state capitalism is possible, too. I mean, give the citizens just enough to be comfortable, vote them the way, you know, vote away whatever term limits you make up for yourself so that you can look like you were willingly elected as dear leader instead of just taking that role upon yourself by force through a totalitarian action. I mean, I don't know. It's too early to tell. But regardless of the fruits of this meeting, the media won't give it a fair shake. They continue with their egregious misreporting. And we know that this will never change. I mean, Jim Acosta from CNN inserted himself into the summit talks by just blurting out a bunch of crap.
Mr. President, did he agree to denuclearize first?
We're starting that process very quickly. Very, very quickly. Absolutely.
Mr. President, 100% denuclearization.
Did you talk about Otto warm beer, sir?
You'll be seeing everything in just a little while. The letter that we're signing is very comprehensive.
And then when he discussed it on a hot mic about why he gave out that big statement in the middle of the press conference, here's Acosta complaining about it.
Hey, if they're not going to be in the meeting,
yeah, that's what I shot to ask him.
All day long, man.
And certainly,
I'm
shot to ask him.
That's all day long.
That's the way it goes.
Again, we are a representative republic. We are not, we are a constitutional representative republic. We are not a democracy. And if you people actually engaged in that stuff they call journalism, and not simply political activism disguised as journalism, then you wouldn't lose your credentials. I mean, does complaining about the menu for the summit qualify as journalism, as CNN did?
Sam, you're shaking your head. You agree. You want to see some substance as well.
I do, but I want to bring it back to the menu for a second, yeah. Not just because I'm hungry, but because typically the White House releases these kinds of details after, for example, the French president comes to the White House or another head of state comes for a state visit. So by releasing the details of the menu, this is again legitimizing Kim Jong-un and putting him on equal footing with other world leaders, which is what he wants. And I really want to stress here that this working lunch is perfunctory at this juncture. If Sarah Sanders is in the room, if we have the press secretary there, they're not diving into the kind of classified details.
You know, one particularly interesting thing about the menu is I was thinking as you were reading all that out, Don, the poor North Korean people, if they knew what is being dished out there, they can't even imagine the types of foods that you rolled off your tongue.
Right, because they just don't. It's a poor country, and because of Kim Jong-un himself and his family, again, you're right, beef short ribs, combination of sweet and sour crispy pork, and Yangzhou fried rice, soy braised codfish. I mean, that sounds really yummy and very expensive, by the way. Listen, I want to talk...
I mean, does MSNBC saying that all sides are liars qualify as journalism too?
Something else that our own Keir Simmons reported today and shared with us at 4 p.m. is that both men are liars. He said Kim Jong-un lies and he said Donald Trump lies. So it is at this point, and I've talked to two former senior intelligence officials, it is a known unknown. Both men are known and established liars.
That's hard.
Well, somewhere Rumsfeld just had a chill.
And the supposedly objective journalist from MSNBC, Stephanie Ruhle, she admitted, quote, "I understand the frustration and outrage around the president. I'm sure I shout some of those words in the shower." Yeah, listen to that.
Elise, walk me through this, because I understand the frustration and outrage around the president. I'm sure I shout some of those words in the shower.
That's not holding a grudge or having extreme bias or anything. I mean, how about hiring someone from the former president's administration to a major news network as an impartial journalist? I mean, that's what they did with George Stephanopoulos. That's what they did with Jay Carney. Did they do that with any Republican administration? Well, you can make a stretch about George W. Bush's daughter. Or you can even go so far to say Fox News hired Dana Perino, Bush's former press secretary. But Fox isn't exactly viewed as everyone's impartial news outlet, as they pretend to do about ABC, CBS, and NBC pretends to be. I mean, just the other day, Ben Rhodes was hired by NBC. Ben freaking Rhodes. So this journalistic integrity of Jim Acosta out there virtue signaling to me is just a giant load of BS. Back in a second.
This is Adrian Slade.
The Adrian Slade Broadcast.
You know, let's talk a little bit about the primaries. You know, quite a few states had primaries for Republican nominations, for congressional seats and Senate seats and what have you. Let's talk a little bit about that, because I think we need to discuss some of the crazy results that happened. I mean, here's the thing. Donald Trump has been galvanizing the base for a while because of his actions, because of his policies that he has implemented, because of the things that he has, he's been doing that we didn't expect. You know, the move of the embassy to Israel, the tax cuts. You know, some of these things would have never occurred under George W. Bush or Mitt Romney or any of those lukewarm milquetoast morons. But here's the problem. I naively thought in the last podcast, you actually heard me talk about this, that this new Tea Party wave that was coming up was a principled wave. And many of the candidates are. It's a principled wave that is using Trump and the Trump phenomenon as a way of saying, look, here is a new group of conservatives, and we support what Trump is doing. Vote us into office. But no, here's the problem. While Donald Trump is galvanizing the base and doing some great things in the name of conservatism, whether or not he believes it or not, it's the idiot Trump cultist gorillas. They're the ones that are messing this all up, okay? We got somebody like Nick Freitas, who is... He was against business licensing, occupational licensing. You know, he wanted to limit government scope on that. He is pro-gun. I mean, he gave a viral speech, which I played on the last podcast, about how necessary the Second Amendment is. But what happens? Oh, he gets primaried out for Corey Stewart. Why is that? Well, Corey Stewart, first off, he worked on the Trump campaign, so he's MAGA, 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 MAGA. Oh, and by the way, I think Nick Freitas is never Trump because he was critical of Trump during the primaries. You know what? Screw you morons. You deserve all of this. Yeah, Corey Stewart is out there going, yeah, I support Paul Nealon, the anti-Semite who was critical of the Jews and has made a list of Jewish people that attack him. To the point where he got his Twitter account suspended. Yeah, those alt-right morons, he aligns more with them. And he's doing a lot of that because he's trying to ride the wave in. Does anyone remember Scott Ridgel? Yeah, Mr. Former car salesman who decided, oh, I'm a Tea Party candidate. And when he got there, he gave us rhino policies. But of course, that's not the case, you know, with Nick Freitas. But we have to destroy him because he didn't go MAGA. He was critical. Oh, well, he's not MAGA, MAGA, MAGA. He didn't toe the Trump line. He didn't kiss the ring and make himself, you know, make Trump king. You know, he didn't go Scaramucci. You know, he didn't go all Giuliani and all these people that get into Trump's orbit and they have to go, you know, if I'm not, you know, sucking the golden teat of Donald Trump, well, then we got to destroy you. So we got to go out there and make ourselves Larry Kudlow-ish and just totally destroy everything we believe in because we have to suck up and gain the praise of the president. And if you don't bend down and kiss his freaking ring, well, then we're going to just primary you out. I mean, is this going to happen to Austin Peterson? He's got a double-digit lead on Claire McCaskill. But because he was a Libertarian Party candidate and he might have said some things critical about dear leader Orangelo Julius Nebuchadnezzar Caesar, Xerxes, Cyrus, all those kings, by the way. Do we have to sit there and destroy all of these principled people just because you didn't like the fact that they were critical of dear orange leader? That's what I'm tired of. I'm tired of those people being a part of that. If that's the big tent, well, then set me up a dome pump pup tent off to the side because I want out of your damn tent, all right? I don't want to be a part of the big tent. We're going to embrace all these new Democrats who think they're conservative just because they voted for Trump. Don't know the first damn thing about what conservatism actually means, okay? They're running around saying they're conservative just as much as John Kasich says he's conservative, just as much as Lindsey Graham says he's conservative, and none of them know a damn thing about what conservatism actually means. They don't know that things as such as small government are conservative values because they want dear leader to be the one to make all the things happen. We got to put a president in there because we need SCOTUS, 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 you know? I get these idiots that are now going, oh, well, you know what? You're just jealous that Corey Stewart was elected and you need to back him because we got to back the other side. You idiots, the problem that we're running into is the primary is where you select the talent. You know, this is the NFL draft before you go into the season and get to the playoffs. This is where it happens. You know, you don't do it after the fact. You don't pick some horrible candidate and then turn around and go, well, you got to back him for the win because, you know, we got to beat the other side. The other side's communist and they want to kill us. Well, yeah, maybe they are. But you know what? Stop sending idiots into battle. Send the good soldiers in. Quit giving us lukewarm crap. Quit giving us things that aren't going to win. Because I can tell you right now, Corey Stewart going up against Tim Kaine, when you just had the governor's election, which showed that the blue districts control the entire state, much like California, Fairfax County, Arlington, all those northern sections of the state, and even Richmond, the capital, because the capital of every state is always blue, because it's always run by a Democrat, because it's always a collection of idiots who are gravitated to the Capitol and clamor for progressive policies. And so this is what we're going to get. We're going to get this garbage in droves because of those counties. Even though if you looked at Virginia as a state, it's as red as a beet, but it's got a little bruise spots from the blue, and the blue actually is outnumbering the red in those little spots. The population's bigger there, big government spillover into Northern Virginia is the reason why we are in the situation we are in. So when you send somebody into battle who can be tarred as a racist because of their stance with the alt-right and Paul Nealon, you've already hampered your soldiers. You've tied their arms behind their back and sent them up against Goliath. You didn't even give them a friggin' slingshot. So now I got these idiots out there just clamoring for it. And I guess what that one gentleman said, that one Trump aide, let's listen to that.
There's a special place in hell for any foreign leader that engages in bad faith diplomacy with President Donald J. Trump and then tries to stab him in the back on the way out the door.
Yeah, I guess that is the new model. You know what I mean? There's a special place in hell for anyone that disagrees with the president. You know, I mean, he's not just talking about Canada. His base is talking about the people you want because they might have been critical. Oh, we got to destroy Ted Cruz. We got to destroy, you know, Rand Paul. We got to destroy all the people that were critical. Wipe them out. Really? The primaries are a critical process because of the fact that you're trying to pick the right person. So, I mean, I would have gone E.W. Jackson. I met the guy before. He's a really nice guy. I would have picked him over Corey Stewart. But, you know, Corey Stewart, he's a Trump loyalist because he worked on the Trump campaign. Yeah, he wouldn't be an opportunist or nothing. You know, he wouldn't have jumped in there going, ooh, Trump's got a wave. You know how many people on Twitter have, like, you know, in followers in the thousands just because they went MAGA, MAGA, MAGA in the beginning? Do you know how many websites, how many YouTube channels have tons of subscribers because they just went MAGA, 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 MAGA? You know what I mean? Who knows if they actually believe any of this crap? A lot of them don't. They're just posturing because they want to Joy Villa themselves, wear a nice MAGA dress, and suddenly have a career of instant following because, you know, they went MAGA, 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 like Roseanne Barr. You know, we want a TV show that's going to go MAGA, 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 and next thing you know, everybody's going to watch it, and suddenly she's going to have this huge following when she was a Green Party candidate running with Cindy Sheehan. You know, that kind of stupid mentality is what's going to destroy your party. It's what's given the rise to a principled party like the Federalist Party. It's what's making other people want to jump ship from the GOP and just let you and the dumb never Trump side of the Mitt Romneys and the Jeb Bushes and the, you know, the Jeff Flakes. You can have this dumpster fire. You know, you can preserve the dumpster fire that is the GOP while the MAGA party takes it over and turns it into this chest-beating MAGA BS. Enjoy that, okay? Because I'm done with it. You know, there's no point in trying to get people who are articulating federalism, who are articulating principled conservative values in their speeches, in their actions, just because they didn't, you know, suck on the orange teat. They didn't bow to Trump's ring. And if you're going to have that mentality, you're going to have a long road ahead because guess what? The other side is way more galvanized in the hatred for what you believe in. They want to see you dead. They actually wanted to see Larry Kudlow dead when he was in the hospital. So this is on you guys. And I'm not going to be a part of it. I'm going to vote for the principled candidate that I see when I have the opportunity, as I just did with Nick Freitas. But you know what? If he doesn't win, well, don't come to me and say, well, now you need to back a loser because of the fact that, you know, we need to make a win against the communist left. No, you can carry that water because I did go and vote. And guess what? My vote didn't work because I was outvoted by somebody who wanted the big Trump loyalist. So you know what? You guys can carry that battle. I will vote for the principled person regardless of who they are.
This is Adrian Slade.
The Adrian Slade Broadcast.
While the MAGA crowd was waging jihad against anyone who was ever critical of Donald Trump in the past, labeling principled candidates as never Trump, even though someone like Nick Freitas, who we talked about in the last segment, was interviewed and admonished as not being never Trump by the likes of Gateway Pundit, the Trump apologist. Well, while they were out there primarying them out, they also elevated, believe it or not, a Las Vegas pimp by the name of Dennis Hoff. He is the Cat House brothel owner. He is now the Republican nominee out in Vegas. He said, well, you know, Trump paved the way. And that's who the MAGA crowd decided to deploy into battle. So as the MAGA crowd's jihad is underway, the left has their own levels of power and are waging their own jihad. One of the progressive left's targets is the Trump Foundation. On Donald Trump's birthday, they're going to sue Eric Trump, Don Jr., Ivanka, Donald Trump. And it's pretty amazing. New York Attorney General Barbara Underwood decided she's going to sue the entire Trump camp. Never mind the fact that Eric Schneiderman, the former AG, you remember the guy who beats women? You know, he gets them drunk and beats them and whatever the case may be. He was the former attorney general. Well, while he was, you know, in power, he kind of looked the other way when the Clinton Foundation was receiving all types of foreign money. All of these laws that were in place to verify and double check a lot of the donations coming from places that may be filled with, you know, things like sanctions, you know, those kind of things. Yeah, all of those, they were looking the other way, allowing those transactions to occur. So it's amazing to me, it's not whataboutism, you know, to say, well, why was it the same standard applied to both? You know, it's the rules work for me, not for thee, you know? Of course, the Clintons always get a pass. Now, at the time of this recording, the IG report hasn't come out yet. It's supposed to be sometime later in the afternoon. It's a 500-page document, and it's supposed to cover a good majority of the investigation with the Clinton Foundation. Now, those in the know and those who have been following some of the people that have been digging up the real dirt behind the Russian collusion know that there's a tangled web beyond Robert Mueller's extension, beyond his investigation. It's an extension of all of these different people, every single one of them having a tie to Barack Obama and Clinton and the Clinton family, and they've all been involved in nefarious acts. And maybe this report is going to come out to show that, but to me, this seems like they're trying to soften that blow by going, oh, well, Donald Trump's foundation's going to be sued and investigated, you know, because they don't have anything on Russia anymore. It's gone nowhere. So while that jihad is going on by the left, there is another smaller jihad that I think should be really kind of looked at for a second. The jihad against a Christian chicken sandwich place. Seriously. You know, it started at the beginning of the week with Jack, you know, the Twitter Nazi, the Twitter CEO who's throttled me down to hardly any views. I've got friends of mine online that, you know, we follow each other and they're like, dude, I don't see half your stuff, you know? So, you know, you say conservative ideas and promote conservative values on social media and they just don't like it. They're going to throttle you down, put you in the dark. So he decided to tweet out Boost at Chick-fil-A because if you tweet Boost, you get 10% off your chicken sandwich, and it was applied. Well, this didn't sit well with Soledad O'Brien. She said, this is an interesting company to boost during Gay Pride Month, Jack. To which he said, you're right. Completely forgot about their background. Now, remember, Chick-fil-A was being targeted by, I think it was The New Yorker, some stupid magazine that the leftists like, The Atlantic, The New Yorker, or Salon, or whatever, Vox, or some BS like that. And they basically just talked about how, you know, they didn't like the fact that New York has embraced a Chick-fil-A restaurant and that, you know, even though it's clean and has great service and has great food and it's quality ingredients and, you know, it's things that you would look for, fast service, you know. He was too busy saying that the cows that they use in their ads were disciples for the Christian chicken sandwich. And it's ridiculous. But you know what? That's the level of hatred that they have towards Christianity. The left does. Because anything Christian, they have to destroy, whether it's Hobby Lobby, whether it's Memories Pizza, whether it's Masterpiece Cake Bakers. You know, bake the freaking cake like that guy at the Tony Awards said, we should all just bake a cake. Yeah, okay. Well, let's go bake an ISIS cake. How about you get the KKK to, you know, get some African-American bakery to make them a KKK cake, which they said they tried to do in a poll that they put out. Would you support that if they tried to do that? And the same people that said, oh yeah, we should bake the cake because the gays are so oppressed and they're just people too and we just all want love. Well, they decided that they would go against the same standard applied to the KKK, have requesting a cake to be made by, you know, an African-American. But, you know, regardless of that, this war on Chick-fil-A that's been going on just will not stop. From Soledad O'Brien scolding Jack from Twitter to get back in line. Hey, you know, don't step out of line there, G. You better get your stuff together. We got the Huffington Post. They piled on the little chicken sandwich shop, too. This is from the Huffington Post. Still, as delicious as the Georgia-based company's fried foods were, they weren't my only weakness as a kid. When I wasn't fantasizing about Greece, I was spending my young, swishy days doing a really crappy job of hiding my insatiable hunger for other boys. Wow, that's great to know. Anyways, back to the article. I was the kind of gay that doesn't go unnoticed. It wasn't until I escaped college that I finally began to accept who I was. Once I did, I vowed to never let anyone make me feel like I was less than them simply because I lusted after and loved other men. Couple things going on right there. First, he lusted, right? Lust is actually something that is, you know, not one of the fruits of the spirit. You know what I'm saying? That's one of the things that we, are kind of looked frowned upon by, from biblical standards. But regardless of that, he also has a bit of shame in what he's doing because he decided to make it known that, you know, I'm not going to feel bad again for feeling the way I do. So I think that's kind of interesting. But to get back to the article, it says, so you can imagine how upsetting it was for me when Chick-fil-A's president, Dan Cathy, proudly came out as a homophobe in 2012 by claiming, we are inviting God's judgment on our nation when we shake our fist at him and say, we know better than you as to what constitutes a marriage. And I pray God's mercy on our generation that has such a prideful, arrogant attitude to think that we have the audacity to define what marriage is about. He's kind of right there, because marriage is a marriage of two things that are opposite, not two things that are the same. And it's something biblical. It's not something that should be legal, shouldn't be mandated by the government. But the history of that goes back to segregation and the Democrats' way of being able to ostracize the African American community and make everybody get into marriage licensing. And what that would do is they can then regulate whether or not you can be with the other races. You can intermingle. But anyways, even worse, the company was putting its money where Kathy's vile mouth was by donating millions of dollars each year to an anti-LGBTQ organizations via its Windshape nonprofit. As disappointed as I was to learn the chain that I had loved as a child was working to make my life and the lives of my fellow queers a living hell, I was heartened by the swift response from the queer community and its supporters. For several years, the only time you'd catch an LGBTQ person or an ally at Chick-fil-A was for a protest. And then something changed. For some strange reason, I still don't fully understand, some queer people and their friends and family began eating at Chick-fil-A again. And they're still eating here. I'd venture a guess that Kathy's somewhat conciliatory yet ridiculously inadequate non-apology and the company's totally bogus promise to stop donating to anti-LGBTQ groups, while it may have ceased funding some of the groups, it's certainly still bankrolling others, may have made some people feel justified in returning to the chain. You know, people can be disturbingly indignant and defiant when faced with giving up their beloved chicken sandwiches. Yeah, so it's the chicken sandwich, the Christian chicken chain that we have to be afraid of. And I mean, Ezra Klein weighed in. He said, it's a rare admission for the industrial food system that animals experience suffering. That's a reality that virtually all of us accept. But it's also a reality that many of us choose to ignore or construct elaborate arguments in order not to act on. And this is true even though we love our animals. Our dogs are members of our family. Our cats are the wallpaper on our phones. Our laws prohibit animal cruelty. We don't believe in animal suffering and that it's meaningless. Melanie Joy calls the ideology that drives all of this carnism. What's crazy is that no one had named it before her. It was just how we ate. But she writes, if we don't name it, we can't talk about it. And if we don't talk about it, we can't question it. But once you name it, you can see it and its defenses. Carnism protects itself by being convenient, by being invisible, by making those who question it look weird. But it's very strange when you look at it closely. It implicates all of us in unimaginable suffering. I hope you give discussion to this a chance. It's about seeing what's happening around us in our name, because our dollars and because almost everything in our lives saves, save for those at Chick-fil-A ads, tells us to look away. Wow, that's deep. But you know what the Bible says? Us crazy Christians, we're told you have dominion over the animals. Now, it also tells you you have to be good stewards. So, you know, if there's a company out there operating in bad business practices like animal cruelty, well, if it comes out, then you go shop at their competitor. Let the free market handle it. But to sit there and say it's carnism because we eat meat, and to equivocate the sheep and the equivocate cows and lamb and pigs and chickens along with your dogs and cats is pretty ridiculous and pretty, you know, sounds like you're living in a bubble there, Mr. Klein. But that's what we have to deal with. The attack on Chick-fil-A, the continuous war on the one industry that will not concede and will not just go, okay, I give up. You've pressured us economically with your boycotts because you think what we believe in is crap. And we're going to give in because you told us so. That's the new America that we live in. We're just going to force everybody into our belief system, whether you like it or not. Unless it's an Afghani restaurant, well, then we'll go there and just praise it. We'll put it on the front page of the New York Times and say, look at this new Afghani restaurant, even though they're throwing gays off of buildings, you know? Because why? Because Islam is the battering ram against Christianity that the left loves to use. Because the enemy of my enemy is my friend, right? That's how it works these days. I'm Adrian Slade. Thanks for tuning in. You can check out the podcast, iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Play, Spreaker, TuneIn, iHeart. You can also get the free Adrian Slade Show Roku channel in your streaming store. And you can also donate patreon.com/Adrian Slade Show, $2 a month, or you can just do a flat one-time donation. It's up to you. Support the show. We'll see you guys next time.